Imagine trying to rewrite the entire economic DNA of a country and doing it in less than a single generation. Oh, and you're starting with a country that is historically famous for doing basically just one thing, right? Pumping oil out of the ground.
Right. Yeah, it's a massive shift.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at a pretty massive stack of research today, specifically focusing on the Saudi Arabia Investment Guide. And our mission here is to really unpack this document because it basically acts as the blueprint for their Vision 2030 economic transformation.
It is a profound pivot, truly. And the ambition here, I mean, it's not just some incremental change. We are talking about completely re-engineering the foundational mechanic of how a nation generates wealth, how it interacts with the global market, and, how it sustains itself when the petroleum era inevitably winds down.
And that pivot is exactly why we're digging into this today. Because whether you are an entrepreneur trying to spot the next frontier market, or maybe a professional mapping out global supply chain shifts, or just someone who is insanely curious about how a petrostate pivots to tech, this matters to you. We
Absolutely.
are looking at a country utilizing just unimaginable amounts of capital to essentially buy a ticket to the future.
Yeah, and to set the stage for how they're actually attempting this, we have to look at the raw geography. I mean, Saudi Arabia has recognized that relying on what is underneath the sand is, well, it's a ticking clock.
Right.
So they are looking at what they can build on top of it, and more importantly, where that sand is actually located on the map.
Okay, yeah, let's unpack that location because the geographic advantage that's mentioned in the source material, it's just wild. If global trade is a board game, Saudi Arabia is basically trying to claim the center square.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, you look at their position, and it sits as this perfect terrestrial bridge connecting Asia, Europe, and Africa. And they aren't just sitting there passively. They are actively positioning themselves as the ultimate launch pad. I mean, if you're a multinational business setting up your logistics in a node that touches three continents, that cuts down on shipping times, supply chain friction, and just, general overhead.
Exactly. And they are heavily capitalizing on that exact bottleneck. They're developing these special economic zones, pouring capital into expanding their maritime ports, and building out immense rail and transportation networks.
Oh.
The stated goal here is to increase non-oil exports to 50% of their GDP. And you don't hit a metric like that just by, tweaking a few trade agreements.
No, definitely not.
You have to completely overhaul your physical infrastructure so that the global supply chain naturally just wants to flow right through your backyard.
So the geography is prime, the ambition is clearly there, but let's look at what they're actually building to facilitate this. Let's move into the specific industries driving this transformation. If we're talking about capital deployment, we have to look at the real estate and construction
Well,
sector.
absolutely. The scale is staggering.
Right. The state largely through their sovereign wealth fund, the Public Investment Fund, which essentially acts like this massive national venture capital firm. They're pouring billions into smart city solutions, commercial spaces, and logistics centers.
And we have to specifically name drop the mega projects driving this because they really represent the philosophy of the entire Vision 2030 initiative. We're talking about developments like the Red Sea Project, Qiddiya, and most famously, NEOM.
Yeah, Neo.
These are not just urban sprawl or like new suburban neighborhoods. They are entire city states being built from scratch right in the desert.
Yeah, EO alone is the kind of project that sounds like absolute science fiction until you realize the checks are actually clearing to build the thing.
Yeah.
To give you a mental image, they are building something called The Line within Neoma. It's a linear city, 170 kilometers long,
Which is just massive.
yeah, completely enclosed with zero cars, run entirely by artificial intelligence, and powered by 100% renewable energy. I mean, it's an architectural anomaly. But the question is, who is actually going to go there? And that brings up their tourism goals. The guide states Saudi Arabia is aiming to have 100 million annual tourists by the year 2030.
Right, and to support that, they have completely overhauled their visa process with a new e-visa system.
Because it used to be really hard to get in, right?
Oh, incredibly difficult. Historically, getting into Saudi Arabia for casual travel required heavy vetting, sponsorships, and specific religious or business purposes.
Right.
The e-visa system just removes that friction of entry. When you want to stimulate a new sector, your first move has to be eliminating the bureaucratic gatekeeping.
Okay, but here is where I struggle to comprehend the scale, though. 100 million tourists by 2030. To put that in perspective for you listening, an influx of that size would essentially rival the most established tourist capitals on the planet, We're talking like France or Spain.
Yeah, it's a huge number.
Are a couple of new theme parks in Quiddia and an easy-to-use e-visa website really enough to drive that kind of, I mean, unprecedented foot traffic into a country that literally just opened its doors to casual tourists a few years ago?
I get that. It sounds like an inflated metric if you look at tourism in a vacuum. But the secret is that none of these sectors operate independently.
Okay.
The tourism goal is deeply integrated into the smart cities like NeoMem, the new biotech hubs, and the green energy grids. They are creating a holistic ecosystem. Yes, leisure tourists will come for the luxury resorts in the Red Sea, but that 100 million number, it includes business tourists, investors attending global summits at these new tech hubs, and professionals coming to assess the infrastructure.
Oh, okay, I see.
The physical cities are the magnet, and the tourism number is just a reflection of the gravitational pull of that completely new economy.
That reframes it completely. The tourists power the cities, and the cities are meant to be powered by green energy. The renewable energy targets in this guide are incredibly aggressive.
Scary.
They are aiming to generate 50% of the entire country's energy from renewables by 2030. We are talking vast solar arrays and wind farms in the desert. But grand visions require serious electrical baseloads, which brings up a huge hurdle. How do you convince risk-averse foreign energy companies to drop $1 billion on a solar farm in an unfamiliar market?
Well, you do it through a financial mechanism called a power purchase agreement, or a PPA. The guide highlights this as a major incentive.
How does that work?
When the Saudi government offers a PPA, they are essentially signing a contract that guarantees they will buy the energy that a foreign investor's solar or wind farm produces. And they often do this at a fixed rate for decades.
Wow, so it basically takes the risk down to zero for the investor.
Exactly the point. If you're a German or Chinese green energy firm, the fear is always, if I build this massive infrastructure, will there even be a market for the power?
Right.
The PPA guarantees the revenue stream. It signals that the government isn't just hoping for 50% renewable energy. They are legally obligating themselves to pay for it, which makes the initial capital investment incredibly attractive to foreign entities.
It is a brilliant mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that same targeted institutional support in the technology and healthcare sectors. The Digital Government Authority and the Ministry of Communications and Information Technology, they are actively funding incubators. They want AI, fintech, e-commerce, and cybersecurity startups.
Yeah, and the healthcare sector is equally fascinating because it's being driven by a demographic reality.
Right.
While Saudi Arabia has a very young, digitally native population driving the tech boom, they are also looking at the horizon of an aging population.
Makes sense.
That creates a massive future demand for elderly care, chronic disease management, and digital health services. The government is actively seeking foreign biotech researchers and pharmaceutical companies to partner with local institutions. They want to innovate in drug development domestically rather than constantly importing medical solutions.
So building an AI-driven linear city, throwing down solar grids, and funding biotech research, that's the physical foundation. But getting foreign investors to actually relocate their operations and write the checks, that requires breaking down decades of historical red tape.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about how they are rolling out the red carpet when it comes to the legalities and residency reforms.
This is where we see a fundamental shift in the government's operating system. Historically, foreign investment in the region almost always required a local partner.
Right. You couldn't just open a shop.
Exactly. You had to surrender a percentage of your company's equity to a local entity just for the right to operate. It was a gatekeeper mentality. Now, the Ministry of Investment, known as MISA, which replaced the older, more restrictive SAJA, allows up to 100% foreign ownership of companies in most sectors. They've shifted from being a gatekeeper to being an investment enabler.
And they have digitized the entire process. No more navigating labyrinthine government buildings. You submit paperwork online and track it like a package delivery.
Yeah, it's streamlined.
But the element that always turns heads in the financial world is the tax structure. The guide highlights a highly competitive flat corporate tax rate of 20%, and perhaps most famously, zero personal income tax.
Yeah, that 0% personal income tax is not just a nice perk. It is a deliberate, highly calculated talent magnet mechanism. Mm. If you are trying to build an entirely new knowledge economy, you need top-tier global talent.
You do?
If you're a highly specialized machine learning engineer in Silicon Valley or a top biotech researcher in London, the ability to relocate and keep 100% of your personal earnings is an incredible financial incentive. It is how you drain the brain trust from other global hubs.
Which naturally leads us to how you keep that talent there. Let's look at the premium residency program.
This is a game changer.
Yeah, there are two main tiers. You can secure an unlimited duration residency for a one-time fee of 800,000 Saudi riyals, which comes out to roughly 213,000 US dollars. Or you can opt for an annual renewal at 100,000 riyals, or about 26,600 US dollars. With this status, you can own property, hire staff directly, and move freely in and out of the kingdom without needing a sponsor.
Right. You can structure your business however you want. A limited liability company, a joint stock company, a branch office. It grants you the operational freedom of a citizen in the business landscape.
It sounds like they're essentially treating national residency the way a tech startup treats equity. But that price tag is steep. Dropping $213,000 for the permanent option is a serious commitment just for the right to reside somewhere. Why structure it with such a high financial barrier to entry?
Because the price tag acts as a calculated filter. They are specifically targeting high net worth individuals, seasoned entrepreneurs, and serious investors. But your analogy about tech equity is spot on.
Oh, thanks.
Psychologically and structurally, this program signals a shift from the old model of the temporary expat who comes for 5 years, makes a tax-free salary, and sends all that capital back to their home country.
Right, the mercenary model.
Exactly. The kingdom wants to anchor wealth. They want you vested in the system. When you pay that fee and buy a home, you become a permanent stakeholder in the Vision 2030 economy. You stick around to actually build it.
That is a crucial distinction. But here is the reality check. You might have the geographic advantage, you might be operating in a booming sector, and you might have the legal right to 100% ownership with your shiny new premium residency.
Yeah.
But a legal document is just paper. Surviving and thriving in a completely different cultural landscape is the actual operating system you have to figure out. Let's get into the boots on the ground reality of business culture and local strategy.
Yeah, this is exactly where spreadsheets meet reality, and it is where many foreign ventures either flourish or fail spectacularly. Entering a dynamic, rapidly evolving market like Saudi Arabia requires a nuanced strategy, and the absolute first rule of that strategy is understanding the local business etiquette.
Yeah, the source material makes this abundantly clear. In the West, a signed contract is often the beginning of the trust. Two strangers sign a document, and then they start working together.
Yep.
In Saudi Arabia, the contract is what you sign after the trust has been established. Relationships are paramount. Face-to-face meetings, mutual respect, and long-term thinking heavily outweigh short-term quarterly gains.
It is the difference between sending a cold corporate email and flying 14 hours to Riyadh to drink tea, share meals, and actually get to know the people you are doing business with. Engaging a local advisor or partner isn't just about navigating the law. It's about gaining cultural translation that you simply cannot download from a market report.
Hold on. I'm trying to square two things here that feel entirely contradictory. On one hand, we just spent 10 minutes talking about NEM, hyperautomation, AI-run cities, and a frictionless digitized tech future.
Right.
But on the other hand, we were saying you still have to fly 14 hours, drink tea, and engage in deeply traditional relationship-based interactions. Furthermore, the guide emphasizes complying with Saudization policies, which mandate that foreign companies hire and train a specific quota of local Saudi citizens. Doesn't the hyper-automated tech kind of defeat the purpose of these manual labor and localized hiring quotas?
That is a brilliant observation, and resolving that tension is really the key to understanding the entire Saudi strategy. What you have to realize is that while the infrastructure they are building is futuristic and automated, the business culture remains profoundly human.
Okay.
You cannot just drop a brilliant algorithm or a piece of software into the Saudi market and expect it to generate autonomous revenue. The technology is just the tool. The relationships are the actual currency.
So Saudization isn't just a tax or a bureaucratic hurdle?
Exactly. Saudization is a mandatory knowledge transfer system. The government knows the oil wealth will eventually decline. If they just pay foreign companies to build automated cities and then those foreign experts leave, the country is left with shiny infrastructure but no human capital to maintain it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Saudization forces foreign entities to hire locals, train them, and upskill the next generation of Saudi engineers, managers, and coders. You're basically paying for your access to their market by transferring your expertise to their citizens.
That makes perfect sense. You have to build the human infrastructure alongside the physical infrastructure. And if you are a foreign business trying to build that trust while mitigating your own financial risk, the source outlines some very specific strategies to help you do that. They heavily encourage public-private partnerships, or PPPs, especially in massive undertakings like infrastructure, education, and healthcare.
Yeah, PPPs are a phenomenal way to lower your risk exposure. Instead of trying to conquer the market alone, you are partnering directly with a government entity on a strategic development.
Less risk for you.
Exactly. The government shares the risk, provides the land or the regulatory clearance, and you provide the specialized execution.
The guide also details some incredible state-backed support institutions. You don't have to operate without a safety net. There is the Saudi Industrial Development Fund, or SIDF, and the Small and Medium Enterprises General Authority, which is known as Manshad.
Think of Manshad as a state-backed startup incubator. It essentially acts as an operational safety net for low-level businesses. They provide access to funding, offer mentorship programs, and help navigate the regulatory environment.
That's huge for a startup.
It is. And the SIDF does something similar, but on an industrial scale, offering massive soft loans to manufacturing and logistics companies that align with the Vision 2030 goals.
But let's say you're listening to this, and you don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars to drop on a premium residency, and you certainly aren't building a billion-dollar solar farm.
Right. Most people aren't.
The guide notes there are lower barrier entry points for everyday entrepreneurs. If you are evaluating your business model and looking for minimal upfront capital investment, utilizing franchising models or forming e-commerce partnerships with local distributors are highly viable strategies.
Franchising is particularly potent because the rising middle class in Saudi Arabia has a massive appetite for international brands, food and beverage concepts, and retail. And if we look at the digital side, we have to highlight the emerging tech trends. We mentioned earlier that Saudi Arabia has an incredibly young population with near universal smartphone penetration.
Yeah.
This specific demographic reality is causing the fintech sector to absolutely explode.
Right, because a young population adopts digital wallets and mobile banking much faster than an older demographic.
Precisely. Mobile banking, blockchain-based services, peer-to-peer lending, these platforms are gaining traction at lightning speed. If you are a tech entrepreneur, joining a Saudi fintech accelerator or licensing your software to a local startup is an incredibly smart, low-barrier move right now. The infrastructure for digital payments is leapfrogging traditional banking models.
The guide also points out a significant push to align with global ESG standards, that is, environmental, social, and governance criteria.
Which is very important to Western investors.
Exactly. As the kingdom tries to attract capital from major Western institutional investors, they know those investors are mandated to put their money into sustainable and ethical projects. So improving corporate governance and emphasizing green energy makes the entire market more palatable to socially responsible global funds.
It all circles back to the core theme. They're building a sustainable foundation, not just a temporary oil boom, but because they are reforming their entire economic engine at such an accelerated breakneck pace, the regulatory environment is constantly shifting.
It must be hard to keep up.
It is. Tax codes are updated, investment policies are refined, and labor regulations like satization quotas evolve. If you want to thrive in this market, extreme flexibility and a willingness to constantly adapt your strategy are mandatory. So let's pull all these threads together and synthesize what this means for you, the listener. We are looking at a nation that is aggressively weaponizing its geographic advantage to become the central bottleneck of global trade. They are slashing historical red tape, offering 100% foreign ownership, and leveraging a zero personal income tax to drain global talent.
It's a bold strategy.
They're deploying the kind of capital that makes science fiction cities like NEOM a reality, guaranteeing revenue for green energy through PPAs, and pushing for 100 million tourists to fuel this new ecosystem.
But the crucial caveat to all of that futuristic growth is that it is anchored by deeply traditional human elements. You cannot succeed there without respecting a relationship-first business culture, and you must participate in their Saudization knowledge transfer by employing and upskilling local citizens. It is high-tech ambition grounded in human relationships.
Which is an incredible balancing act.
It is, and this is where I would ask you, the listener, to look at your own field. Whether you work in artificial intelligence, commercial real estate, global logistics, or healthcare, imagine how an entire sovereign nation pouring this much targeted, uninhibited capital into your sector might disrupt your global competition.
Yeah, it changes everything.
When a player this large decides to forcefully pivot the market, it inevitably creates massive ripple effects that will reach your industry, regardless of whether you ever set foot in Riyadh.
It changes the gravity of the entire global market. Which brings us to a final thought I want to leave you with, something to chew on as you go about the rest of your day. If Saudi Arabia's Vision 2030 actually succeeds, we are watching an entire nation successfully rewrite its economic DNA in just a matter of years.
Truly unprecedented.
It makes you wonder if a country that is historically synonymous with fossil fuels can seamlessly pivot to become a global hub for green energy, artificial intelligence, and international tourism. Will this become the ultimate blueprint for how other resource-dependent nations survive the 22nd century? We started this deep dive by talking about shifting the center of the map. It turns out they aren't just trying to shift the map, they're trying to draw an entirely new one from scratch.